Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks, we are here to talk all about The Dark Tower. We went to the movies, we went and see the Stephen King adaptation of his books with the Dark Man and the Gunslinger, and did we like it? Did we not? That's the good question. You know, you kind of could look at it as the Dark Man and the Gunslinger are the hosts of this podcast, and, you know, we just have to figure out which one's which. And speaking of which one's which, I'm Mike, and let's say hey to my co-host, the other Mike. Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, my friend?
I've just decided to phone it in this week.
I could tell. It sounds like it.
Yeah. You know what? We've been doing this, what, 7 years now? Every once in a while, you just got to phone it in. You just can't bring your aim game to every show.
Oh, I think so, too. And I actually think you're just passing your 7th anniversary with us.
You know what? I think you're right. I think that was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
You're officially with me for 7 years.
7 years. Oof.
As I'd like to say, that's longer than my first marriage. It's awesome.
Yes, well, there's a reason why we inhabit different parts of the station.
Exactly. You have your side. I have my side. It works perfectly.
That's right. No, for those people wondering why I sound like Major Tom, for some reason, Skype is being a bad, bad, naughty boy and has been crashing on me. So I am on my cell phone because, Mike, as you well know, the show must go on.
Exactly. We both have said in times that we were phoning it in, so it's okay.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, well, I think people are used to that.
Exactly. You know, they're used to it with us. And, you know, if you've been listening for 7 years, we've phoned it in for many of an episode, as we like to say.
Right.
So we definitely want to hear from you guys at home. Speaking of phoning it in, you can call us at 404-963-9057. Let us know what you thought about the movie. Did you like it? Did you not? You could also write us at esopodcast@gmail.com. Please feel free to write us and, you know, tell us what you think. Or we're going to be talking about something pretty awesome in a couple seconds, and we want to hear what you guys have thought, because might as well jump in with both feet. Rants and Raves this week is Game of Thrones. We are 4 episodes in.
And we're spoiling it.
We are going to spoil it. And you know what, folks? There's only 3 episodes left.
I know. We're already halfway through the season.
We're over halfway through. So at least by the time we get to see each other at Dragon Con, we'll be done with Game of Thrones.
Yeah, we should be done with Game of Thrones.
At least for this season. Then there's only 1 season left.
Oh, man. It's still my heart. It's such an amazing ride. It really is. This season, you know, they only have, what, 7 episodes. So they're really making the most out of each one. And, you know, people were kind of complaining that, too few episodes. It's like, oh, that's too few. Why can't they, you know, use the money to have more episodes? Well, they spent a lot of money on this week's, and let me tell you, it was worth it.
Oh, God, yeah. Each week has been building and building and building, and it's interesting because, you know, like we said earlier, we're going to spoil, and let's start talking. The last 2 weeks, you've actually seen Dany's fleets and her people get defeated and her allies get captured or killed.
Yeah, she's not doing as well as everybody thought she would.
Until this episode.
Well, Well, she had a. It was a victory to be sure, but the battle's not over.
Oh no!
The war is just begun.
You know, the war has just begun, and I'm curious though: is she going to be end up fighting a battle on two fronts, or is it going to be, you know, they're going to realize the White Walkers are the big enemy, or and put everything aside with Cersei, or are they going to try to bring her down before that?
Good question. The way things are happening, you know, she's got Cersei on one side of her to be sure, but yeah, those White Walkers, they're coming, man. And I think if everything looks like it has in the next episode, the scenes for next week, I'm pretty sure they're knocking at the wall.
Oh, they're getting closer and closer. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens and where that's going to go. But oh my God, what we've seen so far, you've seen some amazing ship battles. You've seen some amazing fights in, you know, castles being taken over. And it's just been really good storytelling so far.
Well, and at the heart of Game of Thrones has always been the characters. I mean, yes, it's nice to see the battles and the dragons and all that and the special effects and CG, but, you know, Game of Thrones is really all about these characters that we really like. And we're getting to the point now where, you know, we're whittling them down because things are happening. And characters that we never thought would share the screen are actually on screen together. There's characters that haven't seen each other since season one are now being reunited. It's really coming together in a way that's really satisfying and exciting, because every time we see these characters, we're like, oh, look, that's finally this meeting between these two guys, or hey, you know, they haven't seen each other in a long time. Is this really going to happen? Are they really going to, like, are we really going to see all four Stark, well, three Starks and a Snow, together in one room, in one scene together? Is that really going to happen? Because there were times when it didn't look like that was ever going to happen.
No, exactly. And
now we've got the three Starks together. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was great. And it was interesting because when you saw Stanza's reaction to Arya coming back, it was just awesome. And
yeah, well, she got such a great reaction from Bran that,
yes,
you know, I mean, anything was a step up from that.
Oh, Bran is just out there. Exactly. And it's just, it's like, I am no longer the boy. I am the, you know, it's like, it's just, it was,
he's
awesome.
The three-eyed raven.
He is. And it's going to be interesting to see, because if you think about it, when Jon left, it was just Sansa there.
Yep. Now he's going to come back and be like, what happened? It's full of Stark.
Mm-hmm. It's a Stark full of Winterfell. And so one of the theories that I heard out there, but I'm not going to touch on yet, is, you know, some returns of older characters that you haven't seen since season one. So it's going to be kind of fun stuff to see where the season goes. I enjoyed it, and how they ended this last episode on the cliffhanger.
Oh, man. I mean, well, they've done that pretty much throughout the run. I mean, it's been good cliffhanger endings, right? Because every time it ends, you're like, God, I can't wait till next week. And it just keeps building and building. So I would imagine that, you know, they'll keep doing that. I just hope they don't end the season that way, because then we'll have to wait, and it'll kill us to wait. I think the whole thing has been great. Like I said, they really haven't wasted a scene. They understand that they only have a few episodes left this season and the next to wrap this story up. So almost every scene is vital, is going to lead somewhere to something. Everybody's got a purpose. And it's just exciting. And they are streamlining the cast. I mean, every episode we've lost characters. And in some cases, that's pretty hard because, you know, I mean, look, I love Dame Diana Rigg. She was excellent on this series. I knew she had to go at some time, but that didn't make it any easier when her time had come.
Mm-mm. Exactly. It's amazing, though, because, you know, how they did it, too. And she finally revealed that she was the one who killed Joffrey. And and revealing it to Jaime. And then the look on his face was just priceless.
Yeah, that's one thing. That's one reason why I don't believe Jaime's dead now, because someone has to take that knowledge to Cersei. Mm-hmm. And right now, he's the only one that knows. So I'm guessing that he is not dead just because of that reason alone. But yeah, I don't think Jaime's story is done yet.
Understandable. No, I totally could see that. And I enjoyed, you know, how this all panned out. And I love how Tyrion was watching the battle from above and, you know, telling his brother, basically, run. don't be a fool.
Don't be stupid.
Exactly.
Don't be stupid. And yet, you know, I mean, it does show, that's the thing. We care, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, we don't like Cersei, but we kind of like Cersei because she's so bad. It's fun to watch. Jaime is kind of come around, you know, he's had some scenes with Cersei that make me go, ew. But then again, you know, I can't say I blame him. I mean, Lena Headley is so gorgeous that, look, you know, I can't blame him. Let's put it that way. But then you've got, you know, so when you face, when you see these characters that we like Jaime, we like Dany, we don't want to see either one of them die. And yet, they're up against each other. So yes, that the one of them has to take out the other, and it's not easy now because there's a lot of the people that are still left are ones that we care about on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You feel for the characters on it. You know, I'm sure Cersei's not going to survive this, and I'll be cheering when, you know, they finally get her.
Do you think Cersei's going to last until the end of the show, or do you think she's just got till this season?
Oh, she'll make it through the season, but I don't think she'll make it through next season.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, I think she, like, I do think the show will end with someone else on the Iron Throne. So I don't know who yet.
You assume. Hell, wouldn't it be kind of cool if they end the show, the White Walkers actually win?
You know what? I would be surprised if that happened. But then again, this is a show that, you know, it's crazy.
It's like Walking Dead, where you say, don't have a favorite character, basically.
Yeah. And then there's these, there's characters that you love to love, and there's characters that you love to hate. And then there's characters that just, man, you're like, yeah, I can't wait till they get theirs. You know, whether it's Theon or Littlefinger or Cersei even, you know, when they get theirs, it's going to be beautiful.
Oh, I'm so waiting for Littlefinger to get it. I do not. He's somebody I don't think will survive the season.
Okay. Okay.
That's my prediction. I think that he might bite it in the final episode. I think it'll either be Jon Snow, or it might even be Sansa who does it.
Who, let me ask you this. So we're getting down to the nitty gritty and everything. Who do you really enjoy watching? What's a character than Game of Thrones that you like when they are on screen, you're like, this is why I watch this show?
Oh, there's too many of them. God, I love the female knight is awesome.
Brienne.
Yeah, she is great. I love the fight between her and Arya.
Man, that was fantastic. I mean, talk about two completely different styles, and yet that was almost the highlight of the episode.
Until I thought that was going to be the highlight of the episode until the final 10 minutes.
Until the dragon showed up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, until the dragons and the Dothraki showed up.
Oh, and I love it. Your people don't know how to fight. It's like, yeah, I can tell. It was just awesome. And it was fun to see. I also love, who else do I like? You know, I love Jon Snow. I always want to see Tyrion. Is just, it has to be Tyrion for me, probably.
What do you think of, getting back to Jon Snow for a minute, what do you think of the idea, because they kind of hinted it, especially at this last episode, that there's sort of love in the air between Dany and Jon. Do you support that relationship?
No, I don't, because I think they're cousins.
that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter back in the day.
Yeah, well, you assume it's back in
all the royal, all the Railer families are related to one another.
Good point. You know, that's what everyone's expecting. I don't go by what everyone's expecting.
They're not cousins. Isn't she his aunt?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Something like
it's
that.
It's weird because I think she's actually, I don't know if she's actually older, but the way the family history is, I think he's her nephew.
Something
I could be wrong about that.
I think it's something like that.
Right. But in any case, it doesn't matter. Like that, you know, like I said, the family's inbreed all the time.
Oh, I know. In the books, she's only supposed to be.
Look at what the Lannisters are doing.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
And now Cersei's not even hiding it. She's like, whatever, let everybody know. Who cares?
I don't care. I'm queen. What are they going to do?
What are they going to do about it?
I'm going to be looking forward to this next episode when she has to explain what happened to all the gold to the bankers.
I think there was a line that said that the gold made it.
Did it? No, because they were when they were talking, I said we'll be all good once the gold arrives. Because the gold, was part of that wagon trail, I thought.
That's what I thought too, but I was reading something online, and maybe this will be right. This will be explained. But I saw someone online say that they went out of their way during the battle or something to say like, "Oh, thank God that the gold's already made it to the wherever they were taking it to."
Ah, okay. Well, so I'm sure we'll find out next week.
Yeah. I was under the same impression. So.
Exactly.
But. Yeah, and I'm like you. I mean, obviously Tyrion has the headlines. He's, you know, been in the most episodes. He's always fun to watch. Peter Dinklage is awesome. Danny, John, I love the evolution of Sansa. I don't know if I trust her. The way she looks at people, you just kind of think, maybe she is taking some pages out of the Cersei Lannister playbook, you know? I like Samwell. That's been a cool storyline with him and Jorah. And, of course, Brienne is a favorite. And Davos. Davos is a great character. You know, where would Jon Snow be without him? You know, he's been so good, you know, and Bronn, of course, too.
Well, Davos has been awesome throughout the whole series.
Yeah.
Because originally he was not with the good guys.
No. Well, I mean, it depends on your point of view.
Well, he was with the Baratheons originally.
Yes. He was with the Baratheon who claimed the throne. And, you know, I mean, look, I mean, that was going up against the Lannisters, and who knows? I mean, that, you know, I might have put my support in with the Baratheon.
Oh, sure. Compared to the Lannisters, of course. That's not even a question.
Compared to Joffrey?
Well, nah. Nah. The Lannisters don't have a good history of ruling Westeros.
Oh, no, but, I mean, they've done it. That's for sure. I think their family tree is about to come to an end. I don't see things boding well for them. Even if Jaime makes it out of this, out of the water, I think, you know, he's still got a bitter end coming to him. Mainly probably because due to his sister. Just like Diana Reed's character kind of pointed out last week, like, you know, your sister will be the end of you. And he said, probably.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, you're probably
but
right.
He's great in bed. So what are you going to do?
Well, exactly.
they have what? Three, they had three kids together, right?
Yes. And they've many times tried to work on a fourth.
I will be very interested. It was pointed out to me, and yeah, it's so deep. I can't grasp it all myself. Not even on a couple of watchings. I haven't read the book, so obviously there's people with history there. Like, for example, I had no idea that the dagger that Littlefinger presented to Bronn first, then he handed off to Arya, was made of that steel that can take out White Walkers. So now you've got this wonderful fighter in Arya. Now we kept thinking, oh, wow, she's going to take out Cersei. She's going to take out the Lannisters. She's going to take out the queen. Well, what if she's the one that takes out the White Walker king, whatever his name is? Like, because she's more than capable.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting
she's
to
got
see.
She's got the steel to do it.
And, she does, but a dagger against a full sword. We saw what happened this week.
Exactly. You know, mm-hmm. She's got skills, so I would not be surprised. Like the Starks, Sansa not so much, but the Starks are ready to do battle with the White Walkers, that's for sure. And you know, Jon Snow's got his hands on a bunch of dragonglass, so yeah, everybody's going to be armed. And if he can just borrow a couple of those dragons, I'm sure he'll be fine. I hope, and we don't know, but if that shot to Dany's dragon was lethal. Certainly the dragon seems fine when we left the episode, but you know, it might not do so well, in the near future. So I don't know if they did actually succeed in taking out one of the three. I guess we'll just have to keep watching, but man, the shots with that's some of the best dragon CG, sequences I've ever seen. I mean, that really showed how brutal it would be to go up against the fire breathing dragon.
Oh, very much so. And especially like that final scene when Jaime was trying to spear the dragon.
Right.
And
you just saw it just start to load up.
And you saw he opened its mouth and you saw the insides lighting up from the fire.
Like, yep, you're about to be toast, buddy.
Exactly. And he was saved once again.
That's what a piece of bread feels. That's what a bagel feels like.
Oh, but when that dragon took out the front line the first time and just like put a hole right down the center of it, it was just like, and they had the corpses just like basically falling apart because they were burnt to a crisp.
They were ash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just amazing.
It was so, I think they did a good job too at making that not, I mean, yeah, we thought it was awesome. But yet we also, you know, took the time to appreciate that was really like ugly. You know, I mean, this was not a conventional way that the war is traditionally fought. I think when you saw Tyrion up on the hill, kind of just watching the chaos, thinking this is ugly. This is not the way to win a war. But, you know, I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's war. And, you know, this was his former people. This was his, you know, basically that was the Lannister army that was being slaughtered.
Yeah. And he knew, and not only did he know Jaime, but he's good friends with Bronn.
Oh, very much so.
So I'm sure, you know, he doesn't want Bronn to turn into a brisket.
No. Well, Bronn was basically his right-hand man for a long time.
Right. So, you know, I hope Bronn's okay. I don't know. I hope he didn't take the brunt of it. I mean, he pushed Jamie out of the way, but I hope he didn't take it.
You don't know. That's the great thing. Oh, you should have heard Judy, though, last night, because she was so frustrated the way they ended it. Because right before that, we had watched the season finale of American Gods. And the ending ends on a cliffhanger also. And she was like, she's like, two cliffhangers. I don't know if I can handle this.
It's a good thing she didn't watch Twin Peaks after that as well.
No.
Because then she would have been 3 for 3.
God.
Is she a big Jamie fan? Is she bummed that Jamie might have bought it?
No, not at all. But she just, it was such a great battle. Oh, you should have seen her screaming. That was just horrid. What's happening to those poor horses?
Michelle would not have, that would have been when Michelle tapped out. She would have been like, you know, you can fry people all you want, but horses, yeah, no, don't do that.
Exactly. And she was just like, no. It was interesting. And it was a very brutal battle. And I was just amazing to see. And I love the episode. I just have loved the season so far. There hasn't been really any true disappointment in it yet.
Not even in a single scene, as far as I'm concerned. Like I said, they've been doing such a good job. I never feel like I'm like, why are we wasting time with this character? You know, I don't ever feel that, because I, even the characters I'm not big fans of, like Theon, right? I'm just like, you know, ew. But I thought the reunited scene between John and Theon was really like tense, right? Because I'm like, oh man, this is.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh, I thought, you know,
this is the guy that's responsible for, you know, taking over Winterfell, and to Jon's knowledge of killing his brothers, you know.
Well, exactly. And as far as he knows, his brothers are still dead. He doesn't know.
Well, you're right. He has no idea.
Well, actually, he does, because one of them was killed last year, if you remember.
Yes, he knows, but I think he knows, but he doesn't know about Bronn, though.
Right. No.
And he certainly doesn't know about Arya.
No. But it's just interesting to see. And it was a good episode. It was great. And
really good.
It's just like all the little storylines are finally coming all together, the payoff after, what, six seasons. Mm. So it's awesome.
Yep. And the beauty is that we have no idea where it's going. You can kind of try to guess,
mm-hmm.
and certain story beats will tell you that, you know, it looks like this is going to happen. But, you know, the producers have shown in the past that, you know, right from the first season, they set the tone. Ned Stark, boom, done. You know, like, this is not going to go the way you think it's going to go all the time. And it makes it very compelling, very exciting. It really feels like, you know, anybody could go at any time. Like, Jamie could be dead. We don't know. But I tend to think that he's not. But then again, you know, if he never shows up again, that would be a weird death for him, though. I would think that, I don't know. I mean, he went out fighting. I'll give him that.
Well, exactly. And that's the thing. He did go out fighting. But if anyone died, I think it was Bronn, probably.
Yeah, probably right.
Which is, you know, because this is the second time he's actually saved Jamie's life, if you remember.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, it's like, but then are you sure it was Bronn that did it? Pushed him off?
Yes.
Okay, because I wasn't sure if it was Bronn or that other soldier, the one who.
Oh, I see. The guy's son?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it was him, I think. Everything I've seen seems to say it was Bronn.
Okay. Because it went very quickly.
It did. You're right.
So, who knows?
But that gives us an excuse to watch it again.
Darren, I'll have to sit down and watch that last scene again over and over and frame by frame.
I've enjoyed it so much this season that the last couple of episodes, I've actually gone ahead and watched the last week's again first before watching the new one, just because it's so good. And I will probably do the same thing next week. Before next week's episode, I'll watch this one again, just because it's just so good.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, and now that they're showing them, you know, you can watch it on demand or replays, or there's so many different ways to watch it. Hell, they even leaked this episode. There were people.
They did, although I heard the leaked version had crap special effects. So for those people who saw the leaked version, you didn't get to see the beautiful, beautiful CG for these dragons. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It was great. So we highly recommend Game of Thrones, and, you know, if you're into that kind of thing. And so we got three more episodes left, and I'm sure we'll talk about it once or twice before it's over. So
probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, tune in 3 weeks from now when we talk about the finale.
Exactly. Well, we'll be at Dragon Con, so it will be like, oh my God.
So it'll be perfect.
Exactly. So with that, we want to hear from you. Did you guys watch it? Did you not? What have you thought? ESOpodcast@gmail.com. We want to know. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with the iconic rock moments. And then the Geek Seat.
Hey, this is Michelle with the Iconic Rock Talk Show Moment. Starting off with something kind of sad. the end of an era approaching. Usually when a band gets into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they've been fighting for years. The acrimony is way before the nomination, like last year with Deep Purple threatening to punch each other. Even their fans were like, dudes, you're in your 70s. But now it looks like just 4 months after their induction and all the love on stage, the current incarnation of Journey is about to implode. Guitarist and senior member, the only founding member left, Neil Schon, has been really vocal on Twitter lately about the situation for a couple of months now. Most recently, he was upset about the fact that Ross Valerie, Jonathan Cain, and Arnel Pineda attended a function at the White House, and the press called it Journey attending the White House. Jonathan Cain's wife is actually a spiritual advisor to the president, so it makes sense that he would be there at some point. But Schon took to Twitter saying it was an attempt to exploit the brand and use the name, and without him present, it was not the band. He insists that Journey is not about politics or any one religion, which is a good sentiment, although it disregards the fact that Journey did play the Republican convention in 2012, but never mind. Whatever the case, Schon has been very adamant in pointing out that he found all the members who are in Journey and that it's his band. At one point, he changed his Twitter handle to Neil Schon's Journey. This kind of attitude was apparent leading up to the Hall of Fame inductions, and now it's on steroids, and it's just really disappointing. I don't know about you, but who wants to work with that? Not sure who's going to crack first, but I would not be surprised to hear the breakup announcement any day now. If you want to watch a band self-destruct in real time, that's ever been anything you've been interested in, follow them on Twitter and get some popcorn. The estate of Michael Jackson has settled its lawsuit with John Landis 3 years ago now, and Landis has now completed supervising the 3D adaptation of Thriller, and it will receive its premiere at the Venice Film Festival. And it includes what Landis calls a shocking surprise. I guess it's proof that hand shot first, I don't know. Also running with it will be the making of Michael Jackson's Thriller documentary that's been out of print since 1990. There's no word yet on screenings for the public. Motorhead is releasing a new album September 1st called Undercover. And yes, it is a collection of covers. And yes, it has an umlaut over the O. It's a collection of some released and previously unreleased covers Motorhead's done over the years. Among them, Sex Pistols, God Save the Queen, Rockaway Beach by the Ramones, Jumping Jack Flash, Cat Scratch Fever, Metallica's Whiplash, Priest's Breaking the Law. It will be available on a 180-gram vinyl with gatefold sleeve album. If you want to head over to YouTube, there is an album trailer you can check out, and also the video for the full-length cover of David Bowie's Heroes, which is one of the last things Lemmy recorded before he left us in 2015. Whenever I think of Lemmy now, I think of the story by Tom Cox, who used to be music critic for the Guardian over in Britain. He asked Lemmy if there was anything that he was afraid of, and Lemmy said, nothing. And then he reconsidered and he said, well, maybe snakes, because they don't have shoulders. That would do it for me. This is Michelle with the Iconic Rock Talk Show Moment. We will catch you next time. Check out the blog at iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
I would say Rogue One has a more worn feel, and I love it for that, because it looks a lot like New Hope, where everything isn't shiny and plastic like the Star Trek films.
We always talk about timelines and the franchises that we love, and now it's kind of like, okay, now we're going to do a Han story, now we're going to do Obi-Wan story.
People do still like to go into movies and watch things that are different, watch things that are not related to superhero franchises.
With him, you might get the Russell Westbrook thing. Kevin Durant leaves and he goes, I'm not going anywhere. This is my team. I'm leading up it for the long haul.
If you're into like very strategic style games and the co-op games in general, it's a highly recommended game overall.
It adds a sense of depth and personality that would escalate fighting games to a higher degree.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmo Show.
And the PCC Multiverse, every week on the Podcast Radio Network and Apple Podcasts.
And over a dozen of your favorite streaming and podcasting options.
Hey everyone, welcome back. We are now here with our guest slash victim of the Geek Seat this week. Let's welcome Dwight MacPherson to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Welcome to the station. For those people who may not be familiar with your work, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been writing comics since about 2005. My first series was called Dead Men Tell No Tales. It's a pirate comic. It was published by Arcana Studio. I've had a couple books published by Image. I did an original digital series for DC Comics called Sidewise. I've done tons of anthologies, and I've just recently started self-publishing my own titles. So I've been in the industry for about 11 years now.
Yeah, congratulations on that. And doing a lot of indie work, too, and that's not easy these days. So,
no, it sure isn't.
Yeah, good for you. And I think we first met because I was really at Heroes when you were promoting the Pirates book, the Dead Men Tell No Tales. So that was pretty awesome. And you sort of have a knack for, shall I say, like dark adventure stories. Is that fair?
I do. But, I've gone to great lengths to do other things, too. I don't want to be, you know, pigeonholed as one genre writer. So,
sure.
I'm working on a superhero book right now, and I've already done a superhero book called Inner Agents as well. So I write superheroes, science fiction, fantasy, you know, everything except romance. I did like one issue of American McGee's Grimm. That was, if you want to call that romance, that's not my kind of romance, but yeah, that's about as close as I got to it. But
Gotcha. Now, in addition to writing and creating, you also, now, are you a publisher as well?
I'm self-publishing for the time being. I have several properties I'm going to put out. And what we'd like to do possibly in 2018 is start accepting submissions. But that's tentative right now because I have a ton of books that I want to get released. So that's what we're going to do first.
No, absolutely. And that's, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's because it's weird because, with my company as well, I mean, I self-publish, but it feels like I'm doing the work of a publisher anyway. So it's, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Even though I am not, yeah. Even though you're not submitting, taking submissions, it's just, you're doing twice as much work creating it and doing the publishing as well. So that's definitely not easy.
Sure. All the production work. I mean, the PR, which is, that's a job,
in itself.
I mean, it would be lovely to hire a multi-million-dollar PR firm to to do all that. It sucks your time out.
Yeah, it really does. It's so much work. And you almost forget, what you're creating. Almost.
Yeah.
But, obviously you've got a new project that is being funded, crowdfunded through Kickstarter these days. You've got a project that's currently people can catch on. Tell us a little bit about The Imaginary Voyages of Edgar Allan Poe.
Well, the book was originally published under the title The Surreal Adventures of Edgar Allan Poe through Image. I had two books that were published there. But over the years, I've looked it over, and there were several changes that I wanted to make. And as you know, novelists, anytime that there's a new edition of their book put out, they can revise their story. So I thought, what if I were to revise my story? But as you realize, making a comic book, it had to be completely redrawn. So what I did is I went back to the script, and I made the revisions that I wanted to make, and we're releasing it now as a 12-issue limited series. So the two books that came before, those who have read those books, that's fine. They're definitely going to, I think they'll really enjoy seeing the changes that have been made to the story. And I definitely think they're going to like the upgrade in art by Luis Cerniowski. He just, a book that he worked on, Kolchak, the Night Stalker, won a Bram Stoker. So he's no slouch, and he's a good friend from way back. So it's a great fantasy adventure. Anyone who loves Edgar Allan Poe or loves his works or loves mythology, I know Neil Gaiman came out with Norse mythology. There's Norse mythology in there, Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology, all the things that you would think that Edgar Allan Poe may dream about, you will find in this dreamland of Terrasomnium inside his head. So it's for fans of Lord of the Rings or any high fantasy, high concept fantasy. I think everyone will love it from children to adults.
Awesome. It does look great. The you're right. The interior art is very stylized, but it fits the subject matter, and it fits, you know, I think fans, I'm a fan of Edgar Allan Poe, and it just feels right.
Awesome. I agree with you. I've wanted to work with Luis for a long time. In fact, when I was originally I pitched the book and it was approved, and I actually went to Luis first and said, listen, will you draw this book for me? And he was like, oh man, I'm working on a book for IDW. Well, now, you know, years down the road, that book was published in 2007. In 2016, he said, hey, bro, you want to work together? And I said, guess what? I'm going to bring this back. So it's really cool because we finally get to do what I felt we should have done in the first place, and that's make this amazing book together. So it's awesome.
And I think one of the things that for indie creators that's really helped a lot is crowdfunding, such as Kickstarter, because sure. You do get a chance to actually get support for a book before it hits the stands. You get a word of mouth about the book, and of course you get help pay for the book before it's finished and wait and for sales, right?
Absolutely. I mean, like you said, with self-publishing, I mean, I don't think maybe a lot of fans realize it, but when you self-publish a book, you don't have any, you know, you don't have investors, and you don't have a huge well of, you know, Bruce Wayne is not making, you know, it's not self-publishing comics. Right. So it's us guys that work another job, and we have to sacrifice. And it's been a real sacrifice to self-publish our books. So, you know, we've been paying our creative teams, but this will just allow us to give them more and to actually get the books made. And I want to get them into people's hands that want them, because as you know, like to publish your image, your books go out. I mean, whatever doesn't get sold will either, you know, it'll stay on the shelf until it, you know, evaporates, or it'll be sent back to Diamond. And a lot of times the books that get sold never get into the hands of readers. By doing it through crowdfunding, you get the book right into readers' hands that will read it and that want to read it and that will enjoy it. So I would much rather, you know, this is a very special book to me. I'd rather present it to people and say, here, you know, this is my, you know, work for you to read. So it's much more personal, I think, because you can connect names to the people that actually give, and you can thank them personally. And I make a point of that because I don't take any of this for granted. You know, I feel like I've been very blessed to be able to tell stories and to have other people enjoy them. So I just want everybody to know how much I appreciate them, you know, giving to our project and investing in us, because I know there's tons of books out there right now in the market. I mean, the market is flooded with great comics. So I know that it's kind of hard to choose, you know, which books you want to collect, which you don't. You know, Marvel is making it a little easier for people lately, you know, in parentheses. But, you know, so there's a ton of good books out there. And there was a stigma that was attached to Kickstarter in the beginning. You remember, oh, well, you know, pro creators don't use Kickstarter. Well, guess what? You know, The floodgates open, and they realized what an awesome chance it was. So now everybody's using it, you know, it seems. So it's a great thing. I'm really enjoying it so far. Now that I'm actually have succeeded on one, okay? The first one was not enjoyable, okay? That was not enjoyable.
I get that.
But I learned a lot. You know, you learn as you go, being a self-publisher especially.
Yeah, and with this campaign, you're off to a great start already. And of course, we definitely want to encourage people to check it out and contribute. You've still got a few more weeks to take advantage of this and get in on this, because it's great stuff. I definitely encourage people. Willie, we'll have a link in our show notes so that people can check it out directly. But we do have, of course, you know, when you come on the station, there is a price to pay because the Geek Seat is sitting there and it's hungry, Mike. It's hungry.
Oh, it's been growling at us all day.
Yeah. I think it got denied last week.
It did. We actually thought about sacrificing JD to it for a second time, but.
Well, yeah, ooh. But these station floors don't clean themselves.
Good point. Good point. All right, Dwight, are you ready for your first question, my friend?
I think I'm as ready as I can be.
Mike, tie him up.
You got it.
Not too tight.
No, it has to be tight. There is no safe word on the station.
Okay.
Are you ready? All right, looks good. He's turning blue on the limbs, which is perfect. Okay. Dwight, your first question in the Geek Seat. What was your favorite geek out moment?
When I finally bought tickets for Tron Legacy. It was in the rain, and I ran up there, and I bought the tickets, and I was coming back to show my wife, and I stopped, and I held my tickets up in the air, and I did, you know what I'm talking about? So, oh, yes. I was, it was awesome.
That is awesome.
That was a sequel we didn't think we'd ever get.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Do you think we'll ever see the third part?
Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen now? But at least we get a ride at Disney World now, so that's exciting.
I know, and we live about 30 minutes away from Disney World, so.
Oh well.
This guy is going to be on that ride as soon as it's open.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
See, I had to think really hard about this, but I definitely think my most disappointing geek out moment was walking out of the theater after seeing Star Wars Episode One.
Really?
That was my disappointing moment. Yeah, you know, I had a friend that went to the midnight showing, and he came dragging into work the next day. He's like, dude, it's so amazing, you know, so I was there at the first showing the next day, you know, and I'm there, and I'm hyped, and you know, midichlorians, what's that? You know, yeah, it was really disappointing, you know. So, yeah, that was my disappointing moment. What a letdown.
What geeks you out the most?
Classic comics. I love classic comics. I mean, you know, I love new comics, but, man, when you get me talking about old X-Men, old Teen Titans, you know, I can go on for hours and hours and hours about how much those books meant to me. So, you know, you put me in a room of old comics, my poor wife, you know, I get in there. I'm like, I remember this. This is the issue where this happened to Phoenix and, you know, and Nightcrawler was it. So, and she's just like, you know, but yeah, you get me in a room full of old comics that were childhood favorites. And I will geek out big time.
I can understand that completely. What turns your geek off, though?
Lazy writing. You know, one thing that I hate about comics nowadays is it seems they've really gone from being, how can I put this? Do you remember when we were young and we read X-Men? And, you know, Chris Claremont used a lot of narration. You know, Alan Moore used a lot of narration. I mean, you could sit down, and it took you a good while to read a comic. But now it seems like everything is gone from being a, you know, now it's narrative is like voiceover. So, I mean, you can read through a comic in like 3 minutes, and you're like, really? You know, and now if you're paying $3.99, $4.99 for a comic, you know, you want something, you want an experience. You don't want, you know, a bubble gum drop that you eat and throw away. I mean, you want something that's going to stick with you. And I'd say comics very rarely stick with you after you read them nowadays. So, you know, I want some meat to my stories. And I think that's why I enjoy indie comics so well, you know, rather than a lot of the mainstream titles, because they give you more to chew on.
No, agree completely with, I love it. I couldn't agree with you more.
Awesome.
That is awesome.
So I try to do that. I can't feel my hands, so
Yeah, well, okay.
That's good. Their feet should start tingling really soon.
I have to write tomorrow, man. Come on.
So?
Okay, go ahead.
What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
You know, I really thought about that one hard as well. And he's not a comic character, but I'd have to go with Sherlock Holmes. I've been a Sherlock Holmes fan all my life. So, you know, I would like to, you know, the Rathbone, you know, Sherlock Holmes, not the, even though Benedict Cumberbatch is really cool. And I love Sherlock. It's fantastic. But I would love to pick his brain, see what's in there, what makes him tick.
You
know, not in the H.H. Holmes kind of way, but you know what I mean? Just to talk with him and stuff. You know.
Oh, he'd be sizing you up and have you figure it out in 2 minutes. So it's like.
Oh, I know he would. It would be awesome. It would be awesome. I'd love to have a conversation with him.
What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Well, you know, at first I said Hannibal Lecter, but I wanted to go with the comic. So I went with the Joker. You know, who would want to meet the Joker? I mean, seriously, the guy's a psycho. I mean, he might rip your face off and laugh the whole time while he's doing it. So I'm going to go with the Joker. I would really not like to meet the Joker under any circumstances.
Number one answer on the show. So.
Awesome.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Now, that's another one that was hard for me, you know, because I think probably most people say Bazinga, right? You know, and my good childhood friend, Steve Holland, is actually running the show now. So, I mean, yeah, I should say Bazinga, I know. But to be honest with you, I'm more likely to quote like 80s song lyrics or, you know, I'm a child of the 80s. Or, you know, Shakespeare or some literary term, but here's something I like to sneak into all my comics at least once. And that's you know, like Rorschach from Watchmen.
Yeah.
So every now and then you look in my comic, you'll say you know, because most American writers just write but Alan Moore likes to write
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's what I add in there. So sometimes I'll actually do that or I'll say, yep. Laying out like Sherlock, so that's me.
I like that, putting in the classics. God, we're calling the Watchmen the classics now. Wow.
Yeah, I know. Man, I bought that like every issue when it came out.
I know, I did. Just, I did also
every month. Oh,
I did amazing. Too. It was like, oh, look at this cover. Oh, wow, what's this one going to mean in the issue? You know, stuff like that. And oh, I wonder who this one's going to feature.
Time. It was an amazing time.
What is your ideal geek occupation?
I'm doing it. Comic book writer. That's like the ultimate. I mean, I've tried writing prose and screenplays and such, but I mean, I love writing comics. I mean, there's nothing like it. I love the medium. I love everything about it. I love collaboration. You know, I love the production of the books. I love proofing the letters. It's amazing. I mean, like we were talking about earlier, you do it all when you self-publish. And really, that's what I've been able to do is I've been able to see the pencils to the inks, to the colors, to the letters, you know, and see the editing done and see it uploaded to Comixology and Amazon Kindle. So I've been able to watch like the whole process. And I love being a comic book writer. But, you know, I will say being a self-publisher, only 10% of my job is actually comic book writing anymore. Okay. 90% is PR. But I love it. I wouldn't change it for anything else. I love writing comic books.
Let's look at the flip side of that then. What occupation would you not like to do?
Well, I actually, my first thought was a red shirt on the Enterprise. You know, that would be bad, right? But if we're talking about real occupation, then I would have to say a PR person. You know, I mean, I can't even imagine doing PR for like Marvel right now. Can you imagine that? You know, I mean, like, you know, you have flaming hair. You're like, you know, like, what's a Firestorm? But no, I would not like to do PR work full time. It's a thankless job and it's a hard job and it never ends.
You're a professional liar.
Yeah, exactly.
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 Oh, what? You're a lawyer? No, I'm a liar.
Exactly.
All right, Dwight, are you ready for your final question in the geek seat?
I am ready.
Okay. How's the feet feeling?
A little numb. I'll be fine.
Okay.
I'll be fine. Okay. I can do this.
All right. first final question in the geek seat is, what is your ultimate geek fantasy?
I would love to write the Hulk. I would love to be just given the character and say, go to town, do your worst, do whatever you want to do with this character. Or I would take Captain America. I would love to be part of the solution, you know, with Marvel. I would definitely love to do it. I would do it for free. I mean, I love those characters. I grew up with them. They mean a lot to me. So I know we as fans take ownership of them in a way, but man, I just like to get them back to what made them so great, you know? And like we were talking about earlier, you know, give more meat to the story. I'd love to give fans something that would stick with them, you know, something that could become a modern classic. That's the ultimate. So there you have it.
That is awesome. Well, Dwight, you've officially made it through the Geek Seat. Congratulations. Woo-hoo. Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $11.66.
Sweet. Awesome. Can I put it on eBay? No, I'm just kidding.
It really is only worked, it's only really good for the station. It decreases in value the closer you get to Earth. Sorry, but yeah.
Oh, bummer. Okay.
So, but
well, thank you anyway.
No, very cool. Yeah. And once again, where can people find out more about what you're working on? And of course, they can go to Kickstarter. We'll have that link. But do you have a website and where people can check out your work?
Sure. If they go to it's hpcomics.net. If they go to hpcomics.net, that's it.
Awesome. And do you do any conventions? Are you going in? Are you making any appearances anytime soon?
We'll be appearing at New York Comic Con.
Oh,
we're
awesome.
Really looking forward to that. Yeah, we have some meetings and some cool stuff set up. So we are really looking forward to go in there and show our properties.
Awesome.
It'll be awesome.
Well, best of luck to you, sir. And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Cool. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment.
Dr. Geek's Moment of Science. Here is the lab director and your human host, Dr. Geek.
It is time, but don't worry, the moment has been prepared for. Yes, that's right. As others scramble to prepare for the great American eclipse, the Gay Dynamics has your back. Since this new Dark Ages will last 1,000 years, we have discounted everything in the glow-in-the-dark category. Everything from our illuminated automatic paint stirring machines to our bioluminescent...
What? What are you saying?
Deus, stop the commercial.
Confirmed.
Thank you. Hello, Dr. Geek here, and everything Claire's been saying is wrong. Completely wrong.
It is? I think I would know if our products are on sale.
No, not that. Everything about the... what'd you call it? The Great American Eclipse? You haven't experienced an eclipse before, have you?
Technically, no.
Aha! I knew it. Claire, your fine customers deserve to know the truth about eclipses.
Do they? Oh, very well, proceed.
By your command. Hello, everyone. Yes, it's true. On Monday, August 21st, 2017, all of North America will be treated to an eclipse of the sun. In fact, those lucky enough to be in the path from Salem, Oregon to Charleston, South Carolina, will experience a total solar eclipse. The eclipse will last longest in Hopkinsville, Kentucky.
Most impressive. But what do the runners-up get? You know, those not lucky enough to be within the path of totality.
Observers outside this path will see a partial solar eclipse, where the moon covers part of the sun's disk.
Well, at least that's something. But no dark ages? I want it to last longer.
No problem, Claire. You can take a picture of the eclipse. Just make sure to use the proper protective eyewear and lenses for your camera. Follow the directions when it's safe to remove them. Oh, and if you're going to take that picture, don't use flash. It creates light pollution and will screw up your night vision.
You heard the man. We have one day, so the sale is back on!
And remember, apply your geekdom!
This moment of science was brought to you by Dr. Geek's Laboratory of Applied Geekdom, a Brazen Wench production, copyright 2017. Dr. Geek's Lab is a proud member of the ESO Network. Join the adventure. Download the full labcast at www.drgeeklab.com and follow us at facebook.com/drgeeklab and twitter.com/drgeeklab.
The tower is all that stands between light and darkness. Thousands of generations of gunslingers were knights sworn to protect it. Now I'm the only one left.
The tower will fall. Get used to the carnage.
Now the war has come to Earth.
You really think you can stop me, gunslinger? Everyone who walks with you dies. No more.
I do not shoot with my hand. I shoot with my mind. I do not kill with my gun. I kill with my heart.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now we are here to talk all about the Dark Tower. That's right. Dark Tower finally came out at the movies. We were raving about it. We were so looking forward to the adaptation of the Stephen King novels. And, you know, they took quite a few books and put it into one movie. That's a good way to put it. Yep, yep, yep. And it was interesting. I was a huge fan of the books. I'm actually looking at the first two books right here sitting on my desk. And I actually, the first book is the first edition. I picked it up when it first came out because at the time I was so into Stephen King. And I, when they found out they were making a movie about it, and that was probably about 7 years ago that they first started proposing about it. At first, it was going to be a movie that led into a TV series, and there was just all these different versions of it, and it stopped. It started and stopped again, and it just had a lot of complications with it, and they finally did decide on a cast, and at first, I heard that it was going to be Matthew as the Dark Man, and then, you know, Idris Elba as, you know, the gunslinger, and thrilled with that. And we're going to talk all about that tonight. So before we get started, let's of course say hey to our guests this week. Couldn't do a movie without Ashley Pauls.
Hello, thanks for having me back.
Welcome back to the show. I gave you last week off, so, you know, I think this is our last summer movie that we're going to be doing.
I think so. Hard to believe it's already winding down.
I know. Gosh, the next time we're going to talk to you is actually when we do our summer movie wrap up. Boy, I wonder how that's going to turn out.
Ooh, that's always interesting.
Exactly. Great to have you on the show. And of course, joining Ashley, we have Paul Combs returning to the podcast. Paul, hey.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back.
Glad to have you back here. And when I put a call out saying, hey, did anyone want to talk about Dark Tower? You were like the first person. I think I just finished typing it and hit send when you wrote me back.
I was really wanting to talk about this movie. I was like you. I was looking incredibly forward to this movie. I first read this book when I was like 12 years old. I first read The Gunslinger, and it kind of helped make me the nerd I am today even. So I was so excited for this film. I just wish it would have met my expectations a little bit more.
We'll talk all about that in a few. And of course, joining us once again, hopefully he hasn't cursed this podcast again like he did the last one. Let's welcome back Adam Garcia.
Pleasure to be here, my friends.
It is so good to talk to you. Coming off of San Diego, I feel almost honored to have you on the podcast now.
Oh, no, please. The honor is mine. Trust me. It's San Diego is a beast.
Oh, I've been to the con, and it's only grown since last time I've been. And so it just looks like you had a blast from the pictures, from the interviews you did. I was jealous. I fully admit it.
I you know, you say that, but I also got advice on interviewing some of those people from you. So don't be too jealous. You're kind of my sensei.
Oh, well, okay. Oh, gosh. What could I say? Okay, before I get too gushy here, we're going to spoil the movie. If you haven't seen it yet, please, folks, take a break, go to the movie theater, go see it, and, you know, then listen to what we think about it. Because, you know, we definitely want to talk all about it, and we don't want to spoil it for anybody. And, you know, I think in some ways some people thought, hey, this movie was spoiled enough. So, hey. So let's jump in with both feet. I know three of us have read the books, and I think Mike and Ashley, you guys came in with fresh approaches with this. And so I'm going to ask you guys, since you guys didn't know anything about the storyline or anything, what attracted you to this?
Well, I would say the premise sounded really cool to me, even though I wasn't really familiar with the story. I love that it's kind of this post-apocalyptic sci-fi kind of Western. And, of course, Matthew McConaughey and Idris Elba. I was in just when they announced the casting for that. So I thought it sounded really cool. I was looking forward to diving in and learning more about it. If I liked the movie, maybe reading the books. I will say that I'd still like to read the books, but I think, unfortunately, the movie did not do the movie justice. So I'm really curious to see what people who actually read the books have thought.
Interesting. Mike?
Well, as you know, as I made it, I guess, pretty clear on this podcast before, I'm not a big fan of Stephen King. So, but I've seen a lot of the adaptations, especially by really talented folks. But I was not initially, I was not planning to see this. I was thinking, okay, well, it's added to our ESO review schedule, but I won't go, and I'll just let everybody gush about it or talk about it that has seen it. But as the months wore on, and I will say that the PR machine, I have to give them credit because it worked. They did their job. And I kept seeing ads and ads for it. And I got to say, the acting, both Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey, made me think I need to go check this out, because I'm a big fan of both those guys. And I thought this is going to be really fun to see them go up against each other. And certainly, you know, even if the material is not that good, they're going to rise above it. And for the most part, I think I came out of there thinking that, but I enjoyed watching them, but that's about the extent of what I felt about the movie. I mean, it's not the worst movie I've seen this year. It's not a terrible, terrible movie, but it's kind of just bland, really. It's just kind of there. It's not as epic in scope as I thought it might be.
No, totally understandable. And you know, you're not the first person I've heard say that. And let's jump in. You know, Adam and Paul, all of us have read the books. And,
yeah, since you guys have read the books, let me ask you guys, like, so it was your expectations were obviously pretty high because this is a big series for you guys. That was the reason that you were excited to see this. How was that reaction? I mean, you know, did it live up to your expectations? Did it not? And, you know, what was lacking?
I was trying to make sure to temper my expectations. As I said earlier, I read the books. I loved them. They kind of formed my nerddom. So I've always loved the books. I wanted a really good movie, but I was careful to temper my expectations. But I was still disappointed with the film. I enjoyed Idris Elba. I enjoyed McConaughey's performances. I mean, they want the weak links, but the actors can only be as good as the script they're given.
Oh, exactly. What about you, Adam?
I will say this. As someone who read all the books and enjoyed them, and I found them very especially the ending, sort of lackluster. I was looking forward to the Dark Tower as this sort of sequel to the series, you know, the repetition of the cycle. And at the same time, with my own, as much as I love the series, I still have a lot of issues with it. And I kind of was able to go into this movie with, you know, not really rose-colored glasses, but sort of like, all right, low expectations. It's the, you know, it's the sequel to the books. So the books are sort of thing. They're sort of separate, but they can sort of do the Star Trek 2009 edition of the Dark Tower, picking and choosing elements from the books to make their own thing. So I'm like, all right, that's what you're doing. It's a brand new start. And I also know that there was, as you mentioned earlier, there was the intention to do a spinoff TV series, which they have a showrunner for. So I sort of approach this more as a pilot to a series, and was sort of like, yeah, this is fine. I found I of a grading system, I was like, it's a B. It's a solid B. It was inoffensive. You could argue it's bland. The actors were fine. There was a lot of elements that I just enjoyed seeing on screen. But as like the pilot of a TV show, I'm like, I would watch this. This has potential. It's not the worst thing I've seen this year. That would probably be King Arthur. And it's not the greatest thing I've seen this year. It's sort of like in this weird middle range of like, meh. I enjoyed it.
No, understandable. It wasn't a bad movie for me. It was enjoyable. I think if I hadn't read the books and knew a lot of the background of the characters, that I might have felt really lost in some ways. But go ahead.
No, please go on.
No. Jump in when you want.
I was going to say, because, you know, I tried to turn off my fan brain. I'm like, am I able to kind of track the story? And I think that was like the big thing. One of the biggest changes from the books is sort of having Jake be the point of view character, the introduction, like our sort of Luke Skywalker entry to this world. And I thought, because by doing that, I was like, oh, they were able to introduce all the elements in a way that I was like, okay, I can follow this. I can understand what they're saying, what they're doing, and the basic mythology. And I didn't need everything answered because I knew that it might be answered later on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I kept on hoping for something throughout the movie that was going to answer stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't lost. I mean, like not knowing the source material, there wasn't. I mean, granted, I didn't know the depth of everything, of like how everything worked and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I got the gist of everything. There wasn't any time where I was like, I don't really understand what's going on here. I mean, but then again, I mean, I have a big history with, you know, parallel universes and time portals and like all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I recognize the tropes. So, I mean, to me, it wasn't really a question of I don't understand what's going on. It was like, OK, well, they're using this and then this and this. So I get that. And obviously I was, granted, I'm not a huge Stephen King guy, but I will say that I can recognize like most of the references. And I was really surprised that there weren't as many as I thought there might be. I mean, I recognize, and maybe there were, I just didn't recognize them. But I was like, there's like a few that were in my face. And then, like in the beginning, and then they just kind of stopped. Like they said, "Okay, we're not going to do that anymore." And I was like, "Oh, that's kind of weird."
I think the hard thing for me was, like you said, I didn't necessarily get lost, but I felt like there was a really rich, deep mythology behind this that we didn't get. Like I walked away with a lot of questions. Like I didn't really know a lot about the Dark Tower itself. I wanted to know more, like who built it, you know. How is it protected and things like that? I wanted to know more about the Man in Black. Like, who is he? Where has he come from? And I felt like the movie was just over too quickly. It was actually, I think it's about 90 minutes runtime, which is really short for a supposed franchise builder like this one. And I feel like it just went too quickly. There was so much more they could have delved into. And I think that would have made a lot richer experience. And I'm curious to see, hear from people that have read the book, what more they could have maybe layered in to make this a more impactful movie.
Well, I'm going to throw something out there. Do you guys think we've become a little jaded? Because this basically was, like Mike had said, about alternate universes or, you know, different versions of Earth or alternate realities. We've seen that so much lately. Back when Stephen King first wrote this, not so much. But, you know, like when I saw the portals open and such. I thought right there, I was thinking Sliders, a lot of it, you know, the old TV show, and, you know, other things just like that. And I was just like, we've seen this, and I think they did it better in some ways than the movie did.
I think that's fair. I mean, and to Ashley's, you know, your questions like who built the Dark Tower and things like that. Michael and Paul can correct me if I'm wrong, but we don't really get those answers in the book, you know, and that's like one of those things that are really interesting about the novels. Like, don't get a lot of answers to major questions, like
you kind of do, like it's hinted at where the Dark Tower came from. Like it separates the gone from the rest of the universe. It's really weird. And it's really hard to explain. I can actually understand why they didn't put things like that in the movie. But the Man in Black's motivation, I would have liked to have seen more of that be answered. Because Matthew McConaughey was just kind of generic evil dude.
Yeah. Which he is fun as hell to watch do that. But it would have been nice if there was something else with him, yes.
But wasn't the Man in Black just like a bad guy to be bad in the novels as well? I mean, again, I don't remember them as strongly as possible. And I mean, there's also, you know, to Paul's point, like I'm glad they didn't explain who Gon was, because in the novels, spoiler alert, Gon is Stephen King, at least an element of him. Like it gets very metafictional or metafictional as the series goes on.
It does. But the Man in Black was kind of a liaison, because the Dark Tower separated the Midworld and Endworld from the darkness that was, I think it was Priya or something, and it separated us, all the monsters, and the Man in Black kind of worked for the monsters to bring them through to the world once the Dark Tower fell. It was weird.
Which he was doing in the movies as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, very much so. And, you know, like we had thought, you know, the planet where the Dark Tower was basically where all the Stephen King stories took place. And, you know, that's why it felt so familiar, because, you know, you had The Shining, which was, of course, what the kid in the movie had. And you also had, you know, you saw Pennywise, you saw the amusement park, you saw all these different things that were in the different Stephen King stories. Went as far as in the books, you had stuff about Captain Trips, and which was The Stand. And there was even rumor that the Dark Man was actually Randall Flagg, who, you know.
And he was also, if I'm not mistaken, Walter Dim in Eyes of the Dragon.
Exactly. And so, yeah, it ties really much better in the books, and you get a little more explanation of that, but you don't have his motive still. It's the same.
Yeah.
That's what I always loved about the Dark Tower, though, is because I've always been a huge King fan. So as I was reading, I would see all these references to the King, the Dark Tower, his magnum opus. And it was fantastic. Like in Salem's Lot, the fact that the Reverend becomes a character in the Dark Tower later in the series, things like that. I always loved those little things that built the universe and expanded the universe.
I think this movie could have benefited from a little bit more of that, because a lot of people are familiar with Stephen King's work over the years. And if there were elements that were familiar to them, it might have been like a nice little callback, and people could have reference to it. Now, like, I certainly appreciated the fact that the kid had the shine, you know, because, you know, everybody knows The Shining. Classic movie. So even if you're not a reader of Stephen King stuff, I mean, pretty much everybody has seen the movie or is familiar with it. So I thought that was pretty cool having that come back. But I will say where they failed was, you know, right away, like we don't know that he has it until later. And we find out that he's so powerful that he killed this demon in order to get into the gate. Well, when he was accessing the gate and the house attacked him, I had no idea what was going on there. It was so badly shot and edited that I just saw he was like being crushed by wood, and then all of a sudden he wasn't. And it was just sort of like I had no idea that he had just killed a demon. And certainly he never even comes close to doing that again. And I just thought that was a bad play by the filmmakers, I thought.
Exactly. And it didn't, there was just things you just shrugged and went, huh? You know, there was quite a few of those in it. And I just, it's something just didn't feel right while I was watching it. It was enjoyable. And like you said earlier, Ashley, I think, said it went very quickly. It was only, what, 90 minutes or so?
Yeah, just about.
And so it went very quickly. And I think this movie, we always say, like when we talk about Doctor Who, where, you know, it could have taken an episode out and the story would have been great. This, they could have put more story in and it would have been even better if they would have made it a 2-hour movie. You know,
and a lot of that came down to studio meddling, though, because I know the film originally had a completely different ending, and I think it was like 20 to 30 minutes longer. But Sony, it didn't test well with audiences, and they recut it and reshot a bunch and all that.
According to the director, like, it was always about like 90 minutes, an hour and 45. So there wasn't much that was deleted. They might have, like, there's a reference. There's a deep nerd reference that they cut out of the movie called The Horn of Eld, which you can sort of see in Roland's backpack. In the books, Roland had lost the horn, which belonged to his father and his lineage. And it had been broken in this big battle at Jericho Hill. And in the movie, you could see it in his backpack, and they have a whole scene that was cut from the film, sort of giving explanation of what that was and its significance. And for those who have read the books and know that at the end of the Dark Tower, or the 7th or 8th, depending on your measure, Roland enters the Dark Tower, reaches the top of the tower, and he sees a sign that says, I believe it says 19, and he realizes that he's been doing this cycle for an infinite number of times. We don't know how many times. It could be thousands, thousands, millions of times that he's been going to the Dark Tower, climbing the tower, and starting right back at the beginning of the Gunslinger. The big thing that happens at the end of the novel is that he has the Horn of Eld for the first time. And that is implying that the next cycle is his last cycle around. And there are references to this concept in the movie, which, again, why I'm a little bit more forgiving about certain elements when you hear Walter say one last time around the wheel. I'm just sort of like, all right, this is the last time. This is the beginning of the last cycle. I'm like, I don't need every question answered because it's going to be different this time. You know, one of the biggest things in the books is he just wants to get to the tower. That's Roland's motivation. He wants to get to the tower and climb the top. And this cycle, it felt more like him finding a purpose in Jake. So as a fan, I'm just like, oh, okay, I'll, this will maybe be answered in the TV show, or maybe this will be answered in the next one, or, you know, I'm just like, I'm just kind of going with the ride. And, you know, again, some of the issues, I went with a coworker who got to talk to the directors and Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey afterwards. So, you know, I'm jealous of him, you know. He read The Gunslinger, and he sat down and he was like, I really wish this movie was like The Gunslinger, that weird Western. And, you know, I kind of also missed that too, but I like the fact that when I was watching it, I'm like, oh, this feels like The Wastelands, you know, which is the third book in the series. Or this is elements of The Wolves of the Kaya, or this is elements of even the original Gunslinger. I like that they were picking and choosing without sort of making a straight adaptation. So, again, I just was a lot more forgiving about a lot of things because I'm just like, oh, this is just something slightly different than I'm seeing, you know? And I don't know. I'm justifying a lot of things is what I'm trying to do. I'm just justifying.
For me, it was more of a disappointment because I was expecting this to be the first chapter in a saga, you know, that they were planning on making all the books. And while I watched it, and then when they killed the Dark Man at the end, it's like, huh? Wait, what? They already had messed up the story from The Gunslinger anyway. And so I figured, okay, they're just doing their own thing and just calling it the Dark Tower with similar characters. But they just didn't even leave this to other stories because the Dark Man is supposed to be throughout the storylines. And it's just, it's when they killed him off, it was just like, no. That's where it lost it for me.
Well, and again, I'm sort of forgiving of that because I know that, like, this is a different cycle. And I know that, you know, they're intending to do a TV show still. So it's like, and they're still planning on doing sequels as far as we know. So it's like, I'm like, it's different. You know, it's the same thing. Like I mentioned at the beginning of it, it's like, it's a Star Trek 2009. You know, it's like Kirk and are it's a sequel to the original series. You know, we have a new Kirk, we have a new Spock, we have a different parallel universe. So I wasn't expecting all those like exact things to happen. I wasn't expecting the Walter to last to the end.
Nope, agreed. And you know, it didn't end the way I wanted to. There were some scenes in that where I was like thrilled and so happy to see it, and I loved, you know, some of the scenes, the flashback where they showed the gunslinger with his father. Great scene. And the dark man said, "Stop breathing." And that was just so awesome. And that was a great scene. And I loved the gun battle in the warehouse at the end. That was just awesome. The kid had been taken through the portal and the gunslinger was there against probably about 50 people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, I kind of – I feel like overall that – you know, I think we're – like to your point, like we're spoiled. Like I think this film came out maybe 10 years ago. Maybe even 5, we probably think of this a lot better than we're talking about it now because our standards have gotten so high.
No, very true. And – you know, like I said earlier, we've seen a lot of the storylines in other movies. We have become spoiled with that. But, you know, I'm even thinking if it was 15 years ago, I think this would have been one of the blockbusters of the summer because of an original storyline.
I think it's also hard, too, because even just this summer, when you think of all the movies we've just reviewed here on ESO and then all the ones that have come out this summer, there's just so much. There's a blockbuster every weekend and it's hard to really compete, each one trying to top each other in terms of special effects and story. And it's hard to go up against some of the Marvel films that have been building on the mythology and story for almost a decade now here. So I think audiences have a lot higher expectations and it's difficult to kind of rise above that and with so many choices, especially on streaming and TV being so good now. So I think it's definitely harder to get audiences' attention and films have to step it up to a level I think they didn't necessarily used to have to.
No, exactly. I agree with that completely.
One thing that, of course, you know, with Stephen King's name on it, it does imply that it's going to be somewhat frightening, somewhat of a horror. And of course, I don't think this is R, right?
No.
So I think maybe that, you know, was a little bit, maybe they should have gone R, maybe. Although this is not your typical Stephen King story. I get that. But there are certainly elements of horror to it. And I did think that, you know, as you mentioned, Mike, the scenes with the man in black, who I was really having, like, you know, confusion with the purple man from Jessica Jones, because he is the performances were about the same, only they don't give the man in black nearly as much character depth. But there's still that creep factor there, just like the stuff in Jessica Jones, where it's really chilling. Like the scenes where he's with the mom, with the kid's mom, and also the scene where he's got the couple and sort of makes them fight it out and tells everybody to watch. I mean, that stuff is really disturbing, and I thought they did a pretty good job with those two sequences in particular.
Hell, when he did that, I just thought, oh, that's just New York, so it's okay.
No, that's true. That is very true. Yeah.
Exactly. Everyone would have their phones out, truthfully. Oh, look.
Yeah, really.
Who could post it up onto Facebook or YouTube first, you know?
Yeah, there did seem to be an element. You're right. There did seem to be an element of this where it was kind of – it felt dated. Like it didn't take place in present time. Like it maybe did take place in about like 10 or 15, maybe in 20 years ago, even though it did seem like it was a modern setting.
Yeah. No, it felt like that. It could have been, you know, that long ago. But some of the – they had a mixture of technologies and such throughout. And so, and they had some of the modern stuff like the iPhones and.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but it just seemed like there was something about the storytelling that seemed like it just didn't feel modern.
No, it didn't. And I think that's because the books, like we said, you know, the first book is what, 20 years old now or older, I think.
Yeah.
It's over 30 years old.
Yeah, I knew it's been a while since I read it. And so it's, you know, I think that was one of the faults. They didn't set, you know, okay, definite, they have to modernize this part of the story. They had to change this. They had to do that. And, you know, I think that was one of the faults with the film. And I'm not trying to bash this film, folks. I actually enjoyed it. You know, that it's not one I'll ever own, but if it's on cable again, I'll watch it. I thought there was a lot of good parts to this. And I just think it had a lot of plot holes and a lot of, you know, as we like to say on a couple of our other podcasts that we've done in the past, you could drive an 18-wheeler through some of these holes. And
I think the other thing that's more surprising, that's kind of surprising about it too, is it's not made by a bunch of hacks either. I mean, you know, you've got the guy who is known for directing the Girl with Dragon Tattoo stuff, and he's got a pretty good resume overall. And, you know, produced by Ron Howard, who's responsible for some of the best Stephen King adaptations that we've ever seen on screen. So it's got a decent crew and people behind it. But although I must say I'm not familiar with the writer. So it's possible that, as some people have already pointed out, that maybe that was the big loss here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to contradict you a little bit there, what you said earlier, Mike. Stephen King, yeah, he is known for his horror, but he has done ton of non-horror stories too, you know. And Dark Tower, I'd never really considered a horror book at all. It was more of an adventure book to me. It was, you know, because like he's done stories like The Body, which ended up turning into the movie Stand By Me, or if you had, you know, he, as Richard Bachman, he did The Running Man, you know, not
Shawshank Redemption.
Exactly. And so you have, you know, a lot of these stories that King did that were just not all monsters and gore. He had some of that in here, but it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't Pennywise, or it wasn't, you know, or it wasn't It, or it wasn't Randall Flagg from, and, you know, it, Mother Abigail. It wasn't vampires, or it wasn't Christine. It wasn't, you know, like that, or Cujo. It was just right. A plain old adventure. And I think it just came across more original in the books than this.
Right. No, I was just saying, though, that
speaking to the books,
go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, we talked about like the writer and like whoever adapted this. The hardest thing with the books, and it is something to sort of keep in mind when approaching this film, it's like, it wasn't just an adventure. It wasn't just a weird Western. It wasn't just a sci-fi element, a sci-fi story. It wasn't just this world time traveling adventure. It wasn't just this meta textual adventure. It's really this big sort of conglomerate of genres, and it is very, it sort of gradually builds on top of itself as the story goes on, because it gets sort of mystical, and then it gets sort of science fiction. So adapting it was always going to be difficult for any writer, director. I mean, if you started straight with just The Gunslinger, it'd be this very hyper violent, weird Western. And then you have to suddenly make a turn. I think is it in The Drawing of Three, where you just suddenly have the main character lose most of his fingers on his right hand from this giant lobster thing. And then he spends most of the story on a beach with these special magic doors that just appear out of nowhere, and then he travels in time through those. And then after that, you have basically a character who died in the first book come back in the third movie in this weird way because he's supposed to die, but he didn't die. And then it gets weirder and weirder, where like actual elements from Harry Potter and Marvel Comics start impacting the story, and where Stephen King, you see two versions of him, both as a drunk and both a bit older, and where the whole ending of the book is predicated on them saving Stephen King's life from when he got hit by the car back in the late 90s, if I'm not mistaken. So adapting something that thick in terms of mythology was always going to be difficult. So to, you know, to their credit, I think, you know, they tried to make it as palatable as possible, but it was always going to be challenged no matter who was behind it. J.J. Abrams gave up on it and because he couldn't figure out a way in. So yeah, it was going to be tough no matter what they did.
Out of curiosity, for those who have read the book, do you think this would have worked better as a TV series if they just started with that and not bothered trying to condense it down to a film? Do you think it would have worked a little bit better if they'd maybe even give kind of each season a different tone or genre to follow the books more closely?
Yes.
I was always skeptical when the movie was announced for the same reasons that Adam just talked about, because there's so many different elements and building the world is so expansive and so many different genres, so many different elements. It's the movie was always going to be difficult, and it had no chance of living up to the fans' expectations.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm looking forward because I know the TV series is being made and I hope they redo it from the beginning and do each season being a different book, kind of a la Game of Thrones. Because there's eight books. So that's eight seasons right there. And these books are so dense that they can do a whole season per book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I don't see a problem with that.
As Stephen King really enjoyed the movies, but we know for certain that he won't be in, whether this continues as a TV show or a sort of weird TV show movie hybrid, he won't play a role in the in those live action adaptations.
Yeah, I think that definitely will be one of the losses for it, because I think it would be great if he could be involved in it, because, you know, it's like, I know with American Gods, Neil Gaiman was fully involved with the TV show, and it's great to have the creator involved. Like, I know Charlene Harris was involved with the True Blood series. I know the author of Outlander, Diana Gabaldon, is fully involved with Outlander. She has to approve every single script. And she's even cameoed in the TV show. So it's nice to have the actual authors involved in, you know, especially nowadays with cable and such.
Well, okay, well,
I was going to say I'm sorry to jump on you, Paul, but he won't be involved on camera. However, Stephen King, there was a weird sort of agreement clause that he had to sign off on a lot of different things in the movie. So like the reason why he approved so much of the movie is because he did sign off on a lot of what we saw.
No, totally makes sense. What were you going to say, Paul?
Well, I was actually going to kind of go the other direction on the King thing. I was going to say King having a heavy involvement may not be King not having a heavy involvement may not be a bad thing. Cause I'm pretty sure we all remember the movie Maximum Overdrive.
Ooh, hey, come on. Maximum Overdrive was awesome.
Oh, Stephen King famously hated The Shining that Stanley Kubrick did, which is the best of his adaptations.
No, nope.
Just saying.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. Understandable.
It does say you know, I did read that the as far as all concerned, the TV series, which is going to feature the gunslinger in his younger years, will be run. The showrunner is Glenn Mazzara from The Walking Dead. So,
okay, so there's
that's still going ahead. And they you know, despite the fact that it's not getting huge rave reviews, they're not counting out a sequel to the movie either. I mean, it says here that this movie was just made for $60 million. Man, that's cheap. I know. Wow. It's really cheap. So it's already made like a third. So it'll definitely make its money back if that's true. You know, whether or not, you know, I don't know. I mean, look, it's, you know, it's Stephen King's name on it alone will give it, you know, a little bit of press to do whatever they want to do now. Like I said, I don't think it's a bad movie. I just, it didn't have enough in it for me to be, you know, invested further in this. So if they do make a series, they do make a sequel, I'll have to take a look at those as they come out to decide, am I really going to, you know, spend time with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. It'll be interesting to think. Any final thoughts before we go ahead and start rating? Well, okay.
I like Idris Elba as Roland. I think that was a really.
Yeah, he got, I mean, I know that, you know, he got some crap when it was cast, but I thought he was great. And look, more movies could do service by casting him as a lead. Like I was never against the idea of him as James Bond. I was just kind of like, well, that might be okay. But after watching this, I was kind of like, even though the characters are completely different, after watching this, I was thinking, you know what? If he was cast as James Bond, I would be on board with that.
Well, Idris Elba is one of those actors I would watch read the phone book. I'm a fan of everything he's in.
I was just about to say that, Paul. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, his you know, he does need a better agent, because my God, if you look at his IMDb, there's some really high points and there's some really points where you're like, man, what were you thinking?
What do y'all think of the other Stephen King adaptation coming out next month? Yeah.
Well, anyway. scary clowns. I had enough trouble with Tim Curry as Pennywise. Now seeing this one, wow. And it's not at all the same story as you saw in the first version of it, guys. It is a completely different story.
Well, let me ask you this, since we're talking about that. Okay, so I picked up on, of course, the Shine from The Shining reference. I picked up on the Pennywise, you know, amusement park, theme park thing from it. Was there anything else that was really like a blatant Stephen King Easter egg a reference that I missed?
That was Christine.
Really? Christine. There's also the low men in yellow coats. There was also, there's Pennywise. Yeah, you mentioned that one. Cujo. There was a minor reference to that too.
There was kind of a minor reference to Blaine, because when they're going through Midworld, you do see the dilapidated train station, which instantly made me think of Blaine from The Wastelands.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yes, and they also had a reference. They also had the talking raccoon and a reference to Oi.
Yes, that's true.
So yeah, Billy Bumbler.
Exactly.
I know that, and I do know that the director wanted. He got a lot. Oh, there's 1409. That was the a reference to the movie 1409, or the books and story 1409. That was in later on. I know that the director wanted to get in a reference to Salem's Lot, but couldn't because of the licensing. There's also a shot of the Overlook Hotel in the therapist's office. Trying to think what else there is. There's a lot. There's a few more. I just can't remember them off the top of my head.
That's cool. I was under the impression that there wasn't that many, but then again, I wouldn't have recognized them, I guess, if I'd seen them. So.
Nope, exactly. Yeah. So let's go ahead and start rating this one. Let's rate it. 1 out of 5. Ashley, go first.
See, I am going to have to give it a 2. I really liked Idris Elba. He was definitely the highlight for me. I would love to see him in many more movies. But this one, just for whatever reason, didn't really work for me. I thought it was too short, and they didn't really dive into the mythology as well as they could have. So, but thought the concept was interesting enough that I am interested in reading the books and seeing the TV show. It's just the movie, unfortunately, didn't work for me too well.
Nope. Understandable. Paul.
I want to give it like probably a 2 or 3, 2.5, let's call it. It just went way too fast. It didn't focus on the world building at all. Though the main actors gave decent performances, it just moved too fast to make you really care or really understand what was going on with them.
Nope. Agreed completely on that one. All right, Adam.
I would probably give it a 3. mostly because I look at it as a pilot to a TV show. I was, like I've said before, a lot more forgiving about some of the flaws and just kind of enjoyed myself.
Nope. Understandable. Okay. Mr. Mike.
I'm going to lean towards a 2.5. It wasn't a horror show. I mean, in the sense that it wasn't a horrible movie. But it wasn't anything that really got me excited. Now I do get, you know, because I didn't have the original reference material to base it on, to have high expectations, it kind of gets a pass in some ways, because like the other two movies that I've seen this year that were disappointing, Alien Covenant and Ghost in the Shell, those I had much higher expectations because I knew I was familiar with the source material and I expected really great things out of them. As Paul knows, Ghost in the Shell did not live up to that expectation. And so if I had had that going into it as well, then my rating would decrease a lot. But as far as I was concerned, it was just a fun evening with Idris and Matthew.
Okay. Awesome. That's fair enough. I'm going to give it a 3. I enjoyed it. It's definitely not the worst movie I've seen this year. It's not the best. It was kind of maybe in some ways the most disappointing for me because I had built it up so much in my mind and how much I wanted to enjoy it. But I'm glad I got to see it up on the big screen. And like everyone's been saying, Idris and Matthew were awesome in this film. They ate the scenes up that they were in. And I just am looking forward to seeing what they come up with the TV show. So, and we want to hear from you guys. What did you think? Did you like it? Did you not? There have heard some great things about it. Our friend Ron Fortier thought it was one of the best movies he saw this summer. So then there's Phantom Troublemaker who totally despised it, you know? And so everyone's all over the board with this one, and it's kind of interesting. So please write us, esopodcast@gmail.com, and we will definitely play your on the air if you call us at 404-963-9057. Or, like we said, write us, do whatever. You know, we want to hear from you. Please. All right, let's take a quick break before I start groveling here. We'll be back in a moment with the Con Report.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about the movie Atomic Blonde. Now, from the second I saw the insanely action-packed trailer for the film Atomic Blonde, I needed to see this movie. I knew nothing else about it other than Charlize Theron was going to be a total and complete awesome chick in it, and that was enough for me. Come to find out it's a Cold War flick with amazing cinematography, fantastic music, and lots of fantastic acting. Theron reminds me of like a female James Bond or John Wick in this film, which the films John Wick and Atomic Blonde have a lot of crossovers in that the makers of the film also did the John Wick films. Charlize Theron and Keanu Reeves trained together during the start of these films, so maybe that's why I got that vibe. I've heard a few people say that the story was hard to follow or it was really slow in paces. I really liked the pacing and thought that the story was really good and really, really like unfolded as you went along. It had a lot of layers to it. And the way they used music in the film was also fantastic. It was just an overall gritty, beautiful film. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Well, the month of August is pretty sparse for seeing ESO Network personnel because we're all getting ready for the big event at the end of the month. But you can see Angela Pritchett. She will be in Otakon in Washington, D.C. next weekend. Actually, this coming weekend. Wow, August is flying by pretty fast. Yes, she will be at that show. So if you're in the Northeast area, like a lot of our good friendly listeners are, if you're heading over to Washington, D.C. to Otakon, say howdy to the geek girl herself, and she'll play the ukulele for you. Very nice. So anyway, we are looking forward to seeing Angela as well as a bunch of other ESO folks at the end of August at what I call the big event. It is Dragon Con, the biggest and best event in the year. It's right here in Atlanta, Georgia. And as anybody who listens to the ESO podcast knows, it is a convention that is near and dear to our heart. And one of the main reasons is because there's so many people from the network that participate or attend Dragon Con. It's always good. It really does feel like a family gathering. It really, it's almost like Thanksgiving, but instead of, well, we do have, instead of pumpkin pie, we have apple pie. That's exactly what it's like. This year at Dragon Con, you can find network, ESO network folks like Mike and myself, Angela Pritchett, Monty Lopez will be there for the first time. Our other movie person, he wasn't here on this episode, but Alex Autry will be in attendance. The Cigar Nerds, Kevin and the mayor of Chicken Town will be there, as well as Jason and Rita. Look at that, all the married couples coming. Oh, I almost forgot Scott and Debbie. They're going to be there as well. All the married couples in the house. Woo-hoo. And then there's JP. And he'll be there as well. There's more friends of the station are going to be there. Well, you know, 80,000 people at Dragon Con. I like to think they're all friends of the station. But it is a great time. We've got our panels, our tentative panel list. So look for us to announce our panels next week on both the ESO show and the Dragon Con report. There is a Dragon Con report that we just put out last week, and which we talked to track directors. That was a lot of fun. So we talked to some track directors that we've never talked to before. And I really had a great time having them on the show. So I definitely encourage people to check that out and listen to them. You may find yourself learning about a part of Dragon Con that you didn't discover before. So that's always cool. We've got one more Dragon Con episode, the Con Report, to record. And we need your help to do so, because we want to know, if you're attending Dragon Con next month, what are you looking most forward to? We want to know exactly what you're excited about. What is it? Is it a panel? Is it a celebrity? Is it seeing us? Probably not so much the latter. But yes, I'm sure we're looking forward to seeing you. That's one of our highlights, that's for sure. But we want you to send us either emails, or you can actually record a note, like using your phone, record a segment, and we'll play it on the next Con Report. We need those, though. You need to get those turned in by the, let's see what the date is on the next recording. I'm going to just check this out while I figure out everything with the calendar. How does this work? Oh, yes. All right. So we need your recordings and your emails and your submissions by the 15th of August in order for them to make the show. So please send us your recordings. We can also call into the phone line like I'm doing right now. You can call and leave a message, a really long one like I'm doing right now. And we will play that on the next conference. We want to hear from you guys because we love talking about conventions, but we really, really, really love talking about Dragon.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Adam, you didn't crash the podcast. Congratulations.
Yet.
Yeah, okay. Good point. Adam, thank you so much, though, for joining us. We do really always appreciate when you come with us.
It's always a pleasure. Trust me, I said this before in the Crash podcast, but I love you guys. I love hearing you. I love talking to you. I look forward to sharing all the weird news and things I get to do with you on Facebook. ESO is my happy place.
Aww.
And I'm just happy to be a part of it.
Wow. I'm almost honored. I am really. I feel almost. It here, man. Almost. Almost.
Almost.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
If you like radio plays, full cast audio plays, you can follow my podcast Radio Room. We just finished our first season. Queens of the Sapphire Sea is one of our top shows. I really think you'll enjoy it. I also have a new novella coming out called Sherlock Holmes and the Green Llama, The Heir Apparent. It's my crossover novel. And if you like politics and Side Your Pulp, I have a new short story in the Gary Phillips anthology, The Obama Inheritance, which is kind of pokes fun at all the alt-right theories they had on Obama. Mine's sort of a Star Trek pastiche. And if you like video content about movies and television, you can see a lot of my stuff on Yahoo.
Oh, yeah. Adam likes being in front of camera. You could tell. Paul, thank you, my friend.
So weird.
Thanks for having me back.
Hey, no problem. You want to talk about your podcast real quick?
Yeah, I'd like to give... I'm half of the CNC Geekcast. We just had our one-year anniversary.
Yay!
It was a big deal. I'm so excited. I'm so happy, and I love the podcasting family. I listen to y'all religiously. Y'all guys are always great. Always. And I just love it. I love podcasting. I love y'all. I love everything. And I'm available at cncgeekcast.podbean.com if you want to check me out.
Awesome. The only thing he doesn't love, folks, is really bad adaptations of Stephen King movies. Honest, right there. Ashley, thank you so much, my dear.
Oh, thank you. As always, it's always fun.
Do you love us too?
No, she...
Oh, sorry?
Confess your love for us. You love us too, don't you?
I do love ESO. I always have a blast coming on to talk to you guys, so...
Yeah, even though she's seeing other ones now, so the love the love must not be that great anymore.
I won't forget you guys.
You know what? I have listened to Ashley on her other podcast, and she's doing a fantastic job. It's nice to know that we have sort of seeing the flower blossom, so to speak.
I was just thinking back to my very first podcast. I think I was so terrified. I said like maybe two or three short things. So it's been a great confidence builder for me. I've loved just getting to know the variety of people in the ESO family. So thanks for giving me a chance to kind of grow and learn.
No, it's been great seeing you blossom, and your reviews still are just amazing. And you even did a great review for this one.
Oh, thanks. I always enjoy having a space to post my writings.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so, so much. And anything you're going to shout out about?
Yes, I'd like to give a shout out to the Story Geeks podcast, good friends of the station. I had a chance recently to record an episode with them talking about top 10 favorite fantasy films. I believe it should be posting soon if it hasn't already, and had fun doing that. So be sure to check out some of their podcasts. They're a lot of fun as well. Mm-hmm.
Jay and his crew do a really great job on his show. Folks, definitely check out them. They're a really great bunch of folks. Who knows? We might actually eventually get them on the network. Sillier things have happened. And Mr. Mike, we made it through another one.
Yes, we did. And as always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you're going to shout out about, sir?
Yes, I need to give a big shout out, 5-year anniversary, to my good friend Jonathan at Horror and Clay. Jonathan has been designing sort of tiki mugs, but with a horror slant to them for 5 years, and it's amazing how far he's come. He's already one of the most highest regardest mug makers in the business today, I think, and he just does a great job. I have all of his mugs, starting from his first one, the Cthulhu tiki mug, as well as his latest effort, which was the pseudopod. They're just great looking mugs. He changes it up every time, and I can't wait to see what he's doing next. So happy 5-year anniversary to you, Jonathan.
That is awesome. Those things are beautiful, if you get a chance to look at those. All right, my shout out real quick. Over the weekend, Judy and I got to go to a concert up in Nashville, of all places, and we got to see Postmodern Jukebox for the first time. Mike has been on the show before raving about them, and these guys put on an amazing show. If you haven't heard of PMJ, they are basically taking modern songs from the last 10, 15 years and putting it into the 1930s, 1940s themes and big band era, swing era. It's just awesome. And they put on a fantastic show. And if you ever get a chance to see Postmodern Jukebox, I definitely recommend it. So I will put a link up to their YouTube channel probably so you guys could check out their videos. And they have each song is done by a different artist, and it's just, it's really fun. I can't rave enough about it. It's just awesome. Speaking of raving enough, gotta rave about you guys. You guys have been leaving feedback for us. You guys have been definitely rating us up on iTunes and Stitcher. Please continue doing so. With that, maybe we'll become new and noteworthy someday. Who knows? You know, one can only hope. You know, we've only been doing this 7 years, and we could become new and noteworthy sometime. You never know. Sillier things have happened. But with the support you guys give us, we really appreciate it. We cannot ever thank you guys enough about it. Join us, speaking of next week. Join us then. We are going back to the book club. That's right. It's been a few weeks since we've talked about our favorite books, and we are going to stick our thumbs up and grab a towel. That's right, folks. We are going to be looking at Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the first book, that is. And we're not going to be worrying about Vogon poetry. We're not going to be worrying about very depressed robots. We are just going to be talking all about Hitchhikers, and it's just going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to this one, and you know, hopefully you'll be joining us for that. But until then, my name is Mike Faber, and I will talk to you next time on the Air Station One podcast. Peace, and we're done. Ta-da.
Yeah.
Because you know I'm all about that bass and no trouble. I'm all about that bass and no trouble. I'm all about that bass and no trouble. I'm all about that bass.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. I ain't no size, dude. But I can shake it like I'm supposed to do. I got that boom boom that all the boys are chasing, all the right junk in all the right places. I see those magazines working on Photoshop, you know that stuff.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057, and if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com eStore, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.